And that's why we don't let Fuzz do the intros sometimes. Welcome to Notcast, episode 196. Wait, are we recording?
You didn't get my public service announcement?
No, I'm afraid not.
Oh, but that dude totally has AIDS. You totally should not have been sucking his dick.
I sure wasn't.
What the hell?
I'm Severin.
I'm horrified.
I'm Fuzz Wolf.
He's back.
You're back.
Oh, God. You know, dude on Twitter was like, you get to be horrible again. And I was like, you know, I don't really know if I'll be horrible. I don't know.
You're always horrible.
No, I'm not. Yes. I'm not having that great a day. I didn't know if I was going to be up for being super funny because work kind of blew today. But
fuck you. Come be funny.
Apparently, I can't help myself or something. So
you have channeled, you have bottled up 3 weeks worth of evil, and you have to pour it out on this show.
And a huge cum shot of evil, just funny, splattered
right
all over your
face. Nose. Bridge of the nose.
Right up the nose, man. So
in the
burns.
Eyes. In the ears.
And then I reach out, I just smear it all over. It's like a mud mask. Your pores are going to feel so good. And they'll open up and I'll fuck them too.
Oh God. So
I missed you, Fuzz.
Thank you.
I have seen the new greatest horror of furry kind.
Just because I'm back, you don't got to describe me like that.
No, this is something that Tesser showed me. It is a character called Patches.
Okay.
It is a Frankenstein's monster with two vaginas, 8 tits, and a blowhole.
A blowhole?
One leg's a leopard, one leg's a zebra. It's got tits from 4 other creatures, a tiger arm, an alligator or lizard arm.
Demon wing and an angel wing?
It doesn't even have that. I guess it only has one asshole. I mean, so they didn't go
they're not
all
even
the way.
Trying. It but needs assholes like, everywhere. when it runs, it leaves like a rainbow of shit behind it.
This was just something that he linked, and it's like, here's this shot, looks like, it's like a dude with 2 cocks fucking a Frankenstein monster with 2 vaginas. What
side
the
by
fuck
side.
Is...
They go very well together,
I mean, seriously, the person with this character really needs some help. What the fuck?
Well, dude doesn't have a unicorn horn. So it's not
no,
a true alicorn.
No, it has a
alicorn.
Fucking blowhole, and there's a porn of the character getting fucked in said blowhole.
Wow. That just sounds like a bad kind of insult. I'm gonna fuck you in your blowhole.
It's like getting fucked in the nose.
Oh, the
you know, I thought I had seen it all in as many years as I've been in this community, but I think that's probably up there in terms of character design.
We need to have like a top 10 of horrible character designs. I don't want to call people out like
no,
that.
No, no.
Not
just,
like you just did.
You know, I don't.
That,
I really hope that's not somebody's character, because if it is, what the fuck?
And if it's I just, hope it's someone's character, ironically.
Yeah.
Whatever. People get their kicks.
Yeah. By having a Frankenstein monster for a character.
Yeah. I'm a tour hermaphrodite.
At least you're from have like a pedigree to your character and species.
Yeah.
Bad Trek fan fiction, sure, but you know, at least cats have been around forever.
Yeah, but yeah,
relatively.
Like the first time somebody saw that, was like, "What the hell is that?"
Well, yeah, it is still kind of what the hell, but you know, there's a history of them.
Yeah, what the history?
What the hell?
And this is where I've managed to make 5 or 6 people butthurt already. Yes.
Are you trying to keep score? I mean,
no, not really. It's just like, if to show this what the fuck picture, and then
well, between
we talk about
you know, that
the cat.
Character has an immunity though. With if it has multiple anuses, it can get butthurt multiple times and not be stopped.
Oh God! It needs a cock in every orifice. Every.
At the
ears,
same time.
Nose.
Blowhole.
Navel.
That's a divot. That's not really a hole.
It's an outie, but it's actually like a little cock. You can rub it, it'll come.
You know that somebody out there has that.
A belly button cock?
It comes lint.
Then, I mean, then of course, I've seen the people that have like two cocks and then their tongue's a cock too and their dicks glow green. You know, I've just kind of browsing around FA and just kind of going, what the fuck? And I'm sure this is...
Did you just do a search for fucked up shit or something and see what you came up with?
More or less. And Tesser helps.
Well, yes.
They're right. Like, Tesser... I found this awfully awesome, awful stuff.
Thanks to Tesser, I've now seen Zebra Man like 5 times. God damn him. That's all I can say.
Zebra Man?
Don't.
It's a one of those fucked up Japanese films.
Yes.
No.
It is truly what the fuck.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's the Robo Geisha? Oh, God.
Oh, man.
I think I still haven't seen that. Bad.
So weird.
Yes. It's horrible.
We fixed the projector. You can come over and watch it one day.
Oh, did you? Fantastic.
I didn't know
when
it was
we fixed the projector.
Oh.
Oh, when? Okay.
Yeah, the color wheel derped on it. It stopped working and made the sound like a small animal being stepped on.
Ooh.
Little...
It's not supposed to make that noise.
No, it's not. We've had it, though, long enough that it's well out of warranty, even the extended warranty we bought on it.
Mm.
So, it's like, huh. Panther's going to take it apart and try to fix it. At least dust it out and unstick the part that's stuck.
None like a lot of people with projectors. You guys actually use yours on a fairly regular basis.
Oh, yeah. We've used it for thousands of hours.
I think you've got pretty good life out of it.
Oh, yeah. Still, it's a $700 replacement that we don't want to have to spend.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought they were actually more than that. They were like $1,200 or $1,600.
The one we have was like $1,100 when we bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Higher.
Oh, $1,000 even.
Ah.
Still... A chunk of change.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But we've gotten use for it for years and years and years and years.
So. Yeah, I'd say you got good value out of it. So mm-hmm. That's good.
And it's, you know, just a little Optoma HD 750, I think it is. The Optoma brand seems fairly solid. Mm-hmm. Okay, the exact brand... 70. Okay, 570.
Like it almost hear you.
You hear the whispers. You've heard your death imminent.
Get on the mic, Panther, and tell us all about the. Is it the DLP, the dual leopard penetration?
Yep. You know that was like the hottest shit for a while. And then they just stopped
dual leopard penetration. I'm sure you can still find it on FA, especially if you have two vaginas. Oh, that would go great, my blowhole Panther.
Just shove it in. Next thing, I'm going to shove an Xbox up your asshole. The original one.
Shove my PS3 up your asshole, and it'll cook like a fucking Foreman grill. Those things run hot, by the way.
Yeah.
Singe off hemorrhoids with it.
So, now that we're being horrible enough to drive off Panther and Webster... And
there's only so much shit that you guys can take.
Yes. Like,
they've had enough.
Panther has, like, maximum frowny face. Good night, guys.
Door slammed.
.mp3.
So yeah, it's been a week. Not
a
lot.
A month.
Yeah, it's been a month for you. So what have you been up to, you jerk?
Oh my god!
Not podcasting with us. Gosh.
Oh jeez. So I moved one weekend. And then the next weekend, I went to Rainforest, and then the weekend after that, which was last weekend, I went to Galaxicon in Minneapolis. So this will be the only weekend this month that Tyrion and I are in our house at the same time.
Oh, God.
Nice.
Because next week, I'm at Oklahoma for OklaCon, and the week after that, Tyrion is in Connecticut for Fur Fright, and then October is done.
Thank God.
Yay.
It's like, this is, we just moved into this house. This is the only weekend that we're both in it together.
Enjoy it.
Well, I mean, we're going to try to get caught up on all the shit that we haven't been able to do because we've both been out of town the last 2 weeks in a row. So, I mean, I guess our unpacking and setting up is probably slower than normal because we've been away so much. But, you know, we're getting shit underway. We've got about half the rooms are kind of close to their final form, you know, as far as, like, furniture layout and connection and stuff, and got my I got the network fixed so my Apple TV and my iPad can connect to my home sharing on my desktop now. Mm-hmm. So that's nice. So basically,
here I am trying to sneak out real quick.
you pulled out a wire there, dude. You need to make sure that that's connected.
I pulled out the headphone jack.
Oh, okay. So we're still recording now. Yeah. All right, cool.
I'll fix that.
It's okay. Saverin's tripping over shit. Don't worry about it. But yeah, I mean, we got like all like our TV, our entertainment center is set up now, so we can have people over and watch stuff. We watched Avengers on Blu-ray a couple Tuesdays ago.
I need to buy that. Yeah.
Yeah, Tyrion picked it up, and he was like, "We'll bring people over and watch a movie," and I'm like, good luck finding one. All the DVDs are in that massive pile of boxes. He's like, oh, we'll watch Avengers. I just bought it on Blu-ray. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know,
we needed God. Wham, 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 wham.
Yeah.
That's the best
part. That was awesome. We needed it anyway, so, you know, it's good that we got it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, then conventions. So, I don't know. I can talk more about that and such. I don't know how much you want me to babble right now.
I don't know.
So what have you been, let's break it up a little bit so it's not all about me.
Well, I don't know if you listened to last week's.
I've listened to the last 3 weeks that I wasn't on.
Oh, so you're caught up.
I'm caught up on Notcast, yeah. So I wanted to hear what my friends are up to, and like, you know, when I'm not here, I kind of want to keep in the loop.
Well, I had Monday off because I'm part of the financial industry, so I got to just...
Columbus Day.
Yep. So I just did fuck all Monday. I just stayed home, twiddled my thumbs. It was glorious.
Back.
And then it's just been a work week. I mean, we recorded on Sunday, so not a lot.
Yeah, I heard that. It's like, what prompted Sunday recording?
Well, Friday we basically got together on Friday, went out and ate, and just chatted for a real long time, had a real pleasant conversation. Then really? We looked at the clock and was like, it'll be like 9:40 before we get home, or and back to here.
And then we had to set up, so it's like,
yeah. Never mind.
We'll just do this Sunday, so.
Okay.
It's only been a really short time since when you last joined the Heroes.
Right.
So. Yeah, well, because it went up that night, and I would like to get back on the regular schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Except it won't be a regular schedule next weekend because we'll be at OklaCon.
Oh, actually, it will be. Well, you'll release it early because we can put the recording that I recorded at Rainforest.
On the feed,
which it's already out there in one form. It's on For What It's Worth feed.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it's... I don't even know if I mentioned possibly doing this on the show.
No, you just emailed us.
Okay, yeah. It's like... 6 people representing 7 podcasts, I think. It's me, Teal, Keo, Kyle, KM, Roland, and Tugs.
That's a lot of K's.
That's 7 people, actually. Yeah, there's a lot of K's there. So, yeah, and it's basically 7 of us all representing different podcasts, and... Because I realized kind of late in the day, like a couple of days before OklaCon, that there's a shitload of people just that coincidentally happen to do podcasts all going to this convention. And the only show whose co-hosts were actually together was Unsheathed because they did a live show there.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody else was just kind of flying solo. Well, that's not true. Teal was there and we do Who First together. But
Yeah.
There was a lot of ones where, like, one member of a certain show was there. So we're like, let's all get together and do, like, just a weird jam session kind of show. So, you know. The sound's not great. Kyle's a little hard to hear in parts of it. But, you know, it's a fun, random thing. And, hey, it's furries at a convention. You know, we could toss that up on the for the week that we'll be at a convention. So,
ironically, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that it works because the OkaCon live show is not going to be able to go up till a few days after the con anyway when we get home. And he'll have to throw it into the mix and everything and then upload it. So.
Yep. But hey, at least we'll have, you know, we'll be able to do the recording and then slap it onto other forms of media. And, you know, hopefully. Huh, I wonder if we're going to record in an A-frame again.
We have the last 2 years.
Probably. Yeah. There's nowhere else really to do it.
Honestly, get like a...
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, you do it somewhere in the lodge, but it's like it's really hard to do programming there unless it's at a point where all the programming in the campsite is done for the day. Mm-hmm. And then everybody sort of en masse moves over to the lodge for like dinner and the dance and stuff like that. But,
yeah,
you know, a lot of times we end up doing it like in the middle of the day. I don't know whether we'll be in the middle of the day or whether we'll be Saturday evening. I'm not sure. Because 1 year it was one way, and then next year it was different, right?
It's probably close enough for us to ask and find out.
Yeah. So
where are you sticking us? On the moon. Okay.
Huh, because you're a bitch that doesn't like bananas. No,
What?
Oh, sorry.
I'll have to explain later.
Yeah,
I'll explain later. Yeah, it's a meme reference that Saverin and I understand.
Okay.
So I went to Rainforest.
Yeah.
And this is kind of funny. I don't remember much about it. And I do remember that show that we recorded because I just listened to the recording the other day. And on that show, we're talking about our Rainforest experience so far. And I'm like, I don't really remember what I did on Friday. And Kia goes, bitch, it was a day ago. And I'm like, I know, I can't remember. So, long story short, I don't remember much about Rainforest.
It's just a blur.
It really is. I was quite busy. We had a successful con as far as sales went. I think we were up several hundred bucks, if not a grand, over last year.
That's good.
Like, we saw a healthy increase. And that's kind of really all I remember. We had a bunch of new releases. They seemed to go over well. Oh, Thursday, there was the book launch party. That was fun. We were releasing Winter Games by Kyle Gold, the newest cupcake. And we also helped to release this year's Rainforest anthology. And by the way, Rainforest is the only con that does this. They release an anthology book every year. They're on the second year now. All the profits from it go to the con's charity for that year. And it's a different theme each year, loosely based on the con's theme. So last year, it was a camping theme. And this year, it's a steampunk theme book. It diverges a little from the con's theme. The con's theme was Warehouse 13. But the book
That's a fun show.
Yeah. The book is, I haven't seen it. The book is steampunk themed, so that actually might be kind of interesting to folks, you know? So we had this book launch, which had, like, it was catered. So we had all this wine and cheese and desserts, and the guy running the con suite, Ash, baked a overly large cupcake. It was like, it's like 10 inches tall or something like that because it's a cupcakes book. So it was pretty delicious. That was good, you know. And we just kind of had fun just hanging out. It was kind of funny because Tieran and Keo and Teal all arrived Thursday evening. And they basically, they got to the hotel and then they all immediately came to this room for the book launch party. You know, because I, you know, we wanted everyone to make an appearance, you know. So it's kind of a rush for the three of them to basically get off the shuttle, go up to the room and like, hey, party! You know, within like 5 minutes of arriving, basically. But I arrived Thursday morning so that I could do setup, and I flew home Sunday afternoon. So Rainforest was a little weird for me because I had to work on Monday. So Tieran and I staggered it. Mm-hmm. So I did the setup, and then he arrived Thursday night and stayed till Monday to handle the breakdown and shipping home the rest of the stock. Ah. And then actually for Galaxicon, what I'm going to do, instead of going into my recounting my experiences right off the bat, I actually want to read one of the emails. Is
I saw that one.
Con report from Galaxicon, and it's from a dude that I met and spoke to there, and he's on the actual con committee, and well, you'll see. But and I can add my own thoughts to this, basically. But he covers a lot of the ground that I was going to cover anyway, so.
Okay.
Got to go ahead and read this. Galaxicon report. Dear Notcast, hi, I'm a long... you know, I do want to throw this in. It amused me. I got as many people at Galaxicon as I did at Rainforest that came up to me and said, oh, I love the show. And I got more than average at Rainforest. There was, like, a lot of people there that, like, wanted to shake my hand or wanted to thank me for Notcast. And it's like, that was kind of cool. You know, there was some podcast love out there, which was kind of nice, you know. It's definitely appreciated when you guys tell any of us that happen to be a con, that kind of thing.
Yes,
you know?
We do appreciate it that people, you know, it's good to know that these emails aren't just generated by clever machines that you know, mine furry forums for fucked up situations and send them to us.
I had a couple people tell me that the show got them through some pretty dark times in their lives. You know, that was how they survived getting through high school or living at home or, you know, dealing with a tough job or something, having this to listen to. So it was actually really kind of heartwarming, you know?
That's cool.
So it's really nice to hear those things. Like, we're here because we're having fun hanging out with friends. We're generally amusing each other anyway. But yeah, it's good to know that in addition to just being entertaining to some folks, that we're actually, like, making a difference
we're
to
useful.
Some people.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's nice to feel useful and have a good time doing it. You know, that's what it's all about. So, sorry, go into the email now. Hi, I'm a longtime listener and a first-time emailer. I'm also on the committee for Galaxicon 2012 and proposed the idea of inviting Kyle Gold and Soph Wolf Press as guests of honor. I think the con was a great success and a lot of fun, but obviously I'm biased. So I'll talk about what I tried to accomplish. Why bring furries to a queer sci-fi fantasy convention? Because we're a perfect fit. As was apparent at... is that us fitting?
Yep.
Thank you, Saffron, for the sound effects there. As was apparent at several panels, even if the speculative fiction authors didn't know about the furry fandom, they had often written stories that involved anthropomorphic animals. As a skilled and accomplished author, Kyle fit right in. And with the majority of his novels published by the Minnesota-based Soph Wolf Press, it was an opportunity I couldn't resist. Around the time I wrote the committee proposal to bring Kyle to Galaxicon, he had won the non-furry specific Rainbow Award for Out of Position. This was a gay awards for books. Mm-hmm. He was transitioning to full-time writer status and expressed an interest in branching out to spread his novels to non-furry readers. Frankly, if I had Waterways when I was in high school, it would have been a revelation. I think his books and other LGBT furry works are important because the natural appeal of animal characters that happen to be queer can have a real disarming effect on internalized homophobia. Gay cartoon critters can cut right through your learned self-disgust of gayness. They have the soul of humanity, but short-circuit your misguided revulsion of same-gender sexuality, and acuteness certainly helps. Furry deserves respect within greater geek culture, and I thought my own ability to promote that was by inviting furries to a queer geek convention. I assumed that if anyone would accept us, it'd be the gays. And I think last week at Galaxicon proved that. I saw people I never expected buying books and wearing tails. I saw a supportive committee and membership with a strong track of furry programming. And I saw Kyle welcomed as a peer among the other professional authors. I do not want to imply that the furry fandom requires the acceptance of other fandoms to have worth. It has made great strides on its own for decades. But I do think we deserve respect for the great artistic and literary talents present within our community. And we should feel free to express ourselves at any convention or internet community reserved for geeks without derision. That's what I strived for, and I hoped we helped to attain it in our own small way. I couldn't have done it without the very helpful presence of Kyle Gold, Soap Wolf Press, Fur Planet Productions, Rabbit Valley Comics, By Cats for Cats, and our local fur group, MN Furs, which is Minnesota Furs. Unfortunately, Galaxicon is a traveling bid-based convention that will look different when it returns to Atlanta in 2013. We're not running it. The local Outlanticon group is. Any furry programming there will have to be submitted by registered members. So this may have been a one-shot deal for now. But who knows what the future holds. My boyfriend Dimby and I will be attending GamerCon next year, and we'll be staying for the pilgrimage to Frolic the following weekend. Hope to see you there. We'll be bringing the furry. Love and scritches, Donovan Elk.
That's a nice.
So.
Yeah, that's going to be out in San Fran next year.
Yeah. So that kind of gives you a little bit. Excuse
to get
bit,
out there three times.
Yeah, there you go. So that kind of gives you a little bit of the background of how Kyle and Soap Wolf and the furry presence kind of fit in there. It was very cool. Furries in general, and even me to a degree, we have this sort of persecution complex where we always feel like apologetic for furry, and like when we go to like a larger geek community.
Yeah, I'm a furry, but I'm not
one of those furries, or I'm a furry, but don't hold it against me, mm-hmm. or something like that, or keep furry on the down low if you're on at an anime con or a brony con or a Star Trek con or something like that.
And I'm like, let that power level fly.
And that's really kind of bullshit because, you know, Donovan's right, you know, we should be respected as just another aspect of a very wide spectrum of geekery. Yes. And it was really kind of cool that every time I saw furries and just regular gay sci-fi fans interacting with each other, it was usually very mutually respectful. Like Kyle and the other writing guest of honor, Lyda Morehouse, were on a couple panels together, and like the one that was actually a real highlight for me, and Kyle has posted in his live journal all his Galaxicon Con report, which I encourage you to read. But they did a midnight slash reading, mm-hmm. where they both read from their own slash fic. And Lyda had written Bleach slash fic.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle realized that he didn't actually have a lot of slash fic, actual fanfic. But the only one that he did have was three stories that he wrote way back in the day and posted to YifStar about Lunatics Unleashed. If you guys remember old show that ran for two seasons.
It ran for two seasons?
Yeah. Jesus. And he had written a pairing between the Coyote character and the Roadrunner character. And what's funny about Kyle's reading is that he does the character voices and everything. So when he was doing the Roadrunner character, he was talking really fast like this, you know, and he does a really good job with the reading. But the two of them interacting was just very cool. The funniest parts were Lyda's facial expressions reacting to what he was saying and everything. And it was just good times. And the audience was, of course, mixed. You know, half of them were there for her, half of them were there for him, and everybody was enjoying the whole experience, and it was just fun. And later in the con, I had an interesting experience where Kyle asked me to explain the difference between Therians and Otherkins to a sci-fi author who had been asking him about it, because I had experience in the Ware community back in the day, and Kyle didn't, so he wanted someone that was involved in that community to talk to her. So I had this discussion with her and him about Wares and Therians, and she asked, like, how does that relate to furries? And, you know, we were talking about that, and then this other person came over, and it was just a lesbian there for the sci-fi. And we had this discussion about it's basically explaining the furry fandom to them, and just because I felt like I was in a very comfortable, inclusive environment, not like trying to explain it to a bunch of people that might be trolls. These were like educated adults, authors, and, you know, people interested.
So what's all this nonsense about?
No, they were like genuinely interested in like they. It was the whole weekend was encountering people that they instead of reacting with revulsion, reacted with curiosity.
That's always nice.
Which was a really cool experience for me, and probably for a lot of the other folks too. Where we're like, if they were like, I don't quite understand this, or could you explain this, or something like that, it gave us a chance to be sort of an furry ambassadors to the non-furry geek community, or at least a part of it. And it was a very cool experience. So, the rest of my Galaxcon experience, I had fun dinners every night. One night with Kit and Kyle, one night with Brer when I first got there, one night with Rabbit Valley. And Sunday night was really nice because Tiern and I, along with Kit and Kyle, were invited to Sofa Wolf's house to have dinner, you know, and we had a very nice Italian meal and wine and, you know, they showed me around their office and everything like that. So it was interesting to see the similarities and the difference to how I've got, you know, my own stock set up and everything like that. And just getting to know those guys a little bit better on a personal level was really nice. And that was actually like part of the whole reason we went up there was like, let's be able to hang out in a less frantic environment than is normal at a furry con, you know? So, I mean, long story short, Galaxicon was not like massively populated and it wasn't like a big selling con for us. But as I had a good time just hanging out, I actually had a cold, so I was kind of out of it the first day. But just hanging out, hanging with friends, having some good conversations, and I guess networking a little bit and getting a chance to talk about the fandom to people that were interested was a really cool experience. So, you know, if they do that again in Minneapolis like that, you know, I think I would like to go just as an attendee. Or, well, I mean, maybe even deal a little bit, but... Oh, and the other thing that was cool was Gary Russell was one of the guests there also. And Gary Russell is someone who has been heavily involved in the world of Doctor Who for many years. He's worked at Big Finish, the audio company. Now he actually works for the BBC. Well, at the time, sorry, a couple years back, he worked for the BBC actually on the show. He was executive producing Doctor Who for a while. So... You know, I got to chat to him for a minute, which is fine. This was kind of a neat experience here. So I bumped into Gary Russell in the hallway, and I chatted to him for a minute, and I got to do the fanboy thing and be like, oh, you know, I enjoyed your work, and I read the novels back in the day, and, you know, and he thanked me and shook my hand. And then I turned around, I walked down the hall, less than 30 seconds later, a furry comes up and he's like, oh, hey, Fuzzwolf, dude, I love Notcast. I just wanted to tell you, and shook my hand. And I was like, wow, this is so surreal because I was just doing this to Gary Russell. So I got to be on like both sides of the fan experience within like 30 seconds. And it was really kind of cool. just a neat, quirky little occurrence there. So that's my Galaxicon story. So
cool. I mean, it sounds like it was a fun time.
It was definitely a different kind of con to go to, but I'm glad I went. And yeah, it was a unique experience, and I enjoyed it. So somebody else want to read an email? And I guess sure. We could start that.
Also, I would like to announce that I just totally re-registered Notcast's IRC channel. It had been on it, I guess. I don't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. But we've had an IRC channel since like episode 4.
Yeah.
And it's always... You know, it's got about 15, 20 people in at any given time. Not a lot of talking going on. Very casual, chatty stuff. Occasionally there's conversations. Mm-hmm. At, irc.anthrochat.net, pound, not cast. Got to have registered Nick for that, just
plug,
so you
plug,
know.
Plug.
Yeah. I'd like to see more. But apparently something changed, and then the channel didn't have an ownership. And it took me a few days to get the ownership right back to it. So, yay, I've re-registered it. And I now own the Notcast channel again. And I'm the op. So, yay.
Yay.
I was like, I don't want somebody coming in and stealing my channel.
That would be awkward.
That would be awkward, very much.
Yeah, that would suck.
It's like suddenly this channel is something horrible.
Well, hey, wait a minute.
Well, I mean,
well, that implies that it's not already something horrible. Well, I know what you mean, but still.
Yeah, well,
you mean about something like, I don't know, dog people fucking? I mean,
that would be awful.
None of that. All right, so I'm going to read an email here.
All right.
Allergies. Podcast question / whatever you should be put here is the topic. Okay. Hey, Notcasters. Kilo here. I'm a 21-year-old Arctic Fox and started listening to your show from the beginning a while back. But about a year and a half ago, had computer issues and had to stop. Kept meaning to get back to listening, but just never seemed to get around to it. I'm starting back up again where I think I left off. Anyway, my question is kind of long and kind of has multiple parts, so sorry about the bunch ton of text. It really isn't. First off, I'll start with the complicated relationship stuff. I live in Georgia now, but I used to live in California about 2 years ago. When I lived there, I started to develop feelings for a friend of mine I had met on FA who lived on the East Coast. I'd always been generally disinterested in relationships, so the feeling was odd for me, but I contacted him shortly after and voiced my feelings. He was flattered, but didn't do long distance because it had ended poorly for him in the past. I understood perfectly and left it at that for the time being. Well, as fate would have it, I ended up myself on the East Coast and in the very same state he lived in, just a 2-hour drive away. Before you go off, no, I did not creepy stalker plan this. I actually thought he lived in New York. I was surprised to find I had inadvertently moved near where he lived. Well, after talking to him again about the top, we decided to try it once more. To give it a try once we could meet up in person. Yeah. Which is where the problem started. We lived a 2-hour drive away, and neither of us had a driver's license or a car. We were always able to walk everywhere, so there was never much point. Public transit also doesn't run between the areas because it's so rural. He's the only guy I'm actually interested in, and I'd love for things to work out, but I don't know if we should keep hoping for something to work out so that we can give this a shot. Do we keep trying? Or do we kind of declare right now a lost cause and shelve these feelings for a while at least till something opens up? I'm kind of at a loss to what to do. You need a car?
Get your fucking driver's license, man.
Yeah, unfortunately, on the West Coast, they have public transit. In rural Georgia, they don't. So get yourself, you're like an old pickup truck, slap some nuts on it and be stealth, you know. You gotta put on your camouflage, right?
Right, yeah.
Add some truck nuts and be manly and... So you don't have to go worry about your trips.
And I'm sure, you know, there's all sorts of excuses about why you haven't got your license or anything yet. Whatever. If you want it bad enough, you'll get it done.
Yeah. Get your license. Get a cheap car.
Get her done. Yeah.
Enough of complex relationship stuff, though. Here's a sex question. That wasn't complicated. Yay. So I'm a sub. I found out something that I can apparently do that nobody I've talked to seems to have heard before. I'll try and explain it the best I can.
I could put my cock in my own ass.
Basically, when I bottom, if I climax before my partner and he keeps going, I can kind of ride that climax as long as he keeps on going, and it makes for an absolutely amazing experience. Trouble is, I can't replicate it on my own. There seems to be some sort of mental block I have in the way of something. Way or something. But I can't keep a toy going after the initial climax. Is this ability normal? Or indicative of some problem? Any tips on bypassing this mental block to be able to keep going on my own? Not being able to do this solo has aggravated me tremendously and has made normal masturbation kind of a lackluster experience by comparison. Which is the unfortunate side effect of making me horny as hell and pretty much unable to get sex off my mind. Anything I can do to help this would be greatly appreciated. As always, you guys are awesome. Stay naughty. Actually, I have an answer for this one.
Oh, okay.
Well, basically, after you come,
you sound kind of off mic there when you move.
I'm sorry. Well, if I'm going to look at you, yeah. Anyways,
you should just hold the mic. Get the handheld.
There.
Okay.
Basically, the reason it does this, it's kind of the same reason why you can't tickle yourself, because you know you're doing it. Basically, after you orgasm, the prostate. It helps make some of the pre. You get the pre out there. You blow your load, and then the other person is still tickling that prostate. And because you're not doing it, your body's like, "Holy shit, this is amazing!" And if you're doing it yourself, you're like, your body knows. You know.
Your prostate's all like, hey, that's not a dick.
That's enough of this shenanigans. I already coughed up everything for you. You stop it now. No. It basically boils down to you can't do that by yourself because for the same reason you can't tickle yourself.
Do you have to cut the charge cable over there?
Yeah.
I mean, with a lot of practice, you could probably keep at it. But the odds are, without a partner, once you come, you've come, and
you're done.
You're done.
Yeah.
That's just the way it works.
Yeah, I'd actually say that instead of saying, like, the. Yeah, unfortunately, these mics, I can hear the mic handling noise on it. Some mics don't do it and some do. I don't know why.
Sorry.
It's not your fault. I'm just saying. Don't play with your mic for yourself.
Okay.
No. God, instead of. I'd say you're looking at the glass half empty when it's totally half full, man. You sound like you have a really amazing experience when somebody's topping you. That's an awesome positive thing. I wouldn't look on it as masturbation is lackluster. Yeah. It's like, dude, masturbation should be fun anyway, but sex should be better, and it sounds like sex is better. So
sounds like sex is fucking fantastic.
Yeah, so way to go. I don't know how common that is. I hadn't heard a bottom say that before, but so if that's not real common, then I think you've got a cool thing going there.
You're a mutant, for me, but not one of those cool mutants that gets asked to be on Dr. Xavier's team.
But still Professor pretty Xavier's. Awesome superpower, honestly.
I don't know.
Masturbation for me is always, it's kind of like a snack where sex is more like a meal. You know, it's a tide me over, not.
I don't know, Shiv. I'm not a Navor.
Oh, shut up.
Masturbation is a snack.
Practice safe snacking.
Oh.
I was going to say, I was with a bottom and his mate once, and he got off once from a prostate-induced ejaculation, you know, from his mate's massive cock hammering his prostate. And he's like, no, wait, I could get one this way, too. So he kept jerking himself, and he came again from doing it that way. So I don't know if that relates, but.
And the third time it shot dust and he died.
No, you'd have to come like 20, 30 times to do that, I think. I don't know. Well, not to shoot dust, but to run dry.
And be like Kevin Smith, smoke a bunch of weed and hit the fleshlight 6 times.
Yeah, I tagged that thing. Oh! Well, it's the same with girls, though. Girls can apparently run dry, too, if they go for long enough. Yeah. Your balls can only produce so much semen. And I don't know whatever vag monsters create pussy juice. It's like the pussy trolls drooling, and that's where pussy juice comes from. Right?
This has been Science Minute.
That's right, Sheba, right?
Okay.
Yes. I assumed you would know, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Sure.
Whatever.
You've looked at vaginas up close. Not your own, because that's an awkward angle, but.
Chuck is going to totally make a loop.
Can you unbirth yourself?
No.
Like Ouroboros, you know, put your head inside your
own. I don't want to wear myself like a hat, no.
Yeah. And then motorboat yourself.
No, no. No.
That's a
limage. Thank you.
Limbs everywhere, flailing in pleasure.
Yeah, I'm reading an email.
Okay, have fun with that. I'll be asleep over here.
Let's see. Another coming out question. Before I ask the next in the recent chain of should I come out questions, I'd like to recommend a gay fantasy book for the guy from last week. It's called The Sword and the Dragon by Diane Duane.
Duane.
Is it Duane?
I think so.
It's Duane.
Yeah, if I was told that pronounced Duane, it's a first name, usually, but.
And it's actually an omnibus of the first two novels in a trilogy called The Tale of the Five. I originally read it because dragons are awesome and it had one on the cover, but I grew to enjoy it for its interesting portrayal of human sexuality. When I first read it, I didn't know I was bi, so I thought it was kind of weird when the main character nonchalantly runs off to rescue his best friend, who also turns out to be his lover. The interesting thing was that they didn't feel the need to make a big deal out of the fact that they were gay. It was just the way it was and deserved no more special attention than a straight couple. It wasn't treated like some huge revelation, but like something we should have known all along. The series also takes a rather open approach to sex. Bisexuality is common, almost expected, and it's not uncommon for people to have one partner and a number of other lovers occasionally. It's been a while since I read it, so this is all being pulled from memories that are several years old, but I remember it being a very good read. It's available used on Amazon for under $10. Anyway, here's my situation. I discovered I was bi about 2 years ago and have only told a few friends. None of my family knows, nor does anyone at work, though I think a few of them suspect. I'm newly single from my straight LTR, so it's generally assumed I'm straight, so if I choose to remain discreet, it would be doable. However, a wise man once said, chicks are crazy, date dudes.
Yeah, I'm wise.
I plan on following this advice and have so far had a couple of dates with a couple of different guys. I plan on taking advantage of the fact that I now live alone, so I don't know how easy it would be to maintain the facade once I have a boyfriend or a friend with benefits. I'm more or less self-sufficient, though I often lean on my grandparents for support and see them often. Also, I may go back to school, in which case my parents would be paying half of my tuition, so I don't really want to alienate them. My parents would most likely get over it, though I doubt they'd approve. We have, however, crossed the disapproving parents bridge repeatedly and with great vigor when I was living with my ex, and we survived that. Unless my parents have some deep-seated issues I don't know about, we should be fine, if a bit awkward. My grandparents are another matter. We are very close, now that I see them every day and live in the same small town. I've been slowly working my grandpa, who has stated before that he thinks homosexuality is a choice, and he doesn't approve. I asked him if he ever chose to be attracted to women, or if he could choose not to be, and he kind of paused for a bit and admitted I had a good point. I think he can be reasoned with, but I don't really want to hurt the relationship I have with him. Another factor to consider is that I do live in a small town in rural Iowa, where gossip travels faster than the speed of sound, and everyone is always in everyone else's business. I don't want to be at the mercy of a landlord, plumber, or tow truck driver who wouldn't think twice about sticking it to some deviant queer's payback for their sin. So I'm kind of tempted just to lay low. I also have a desire to be open about who I am, at least who I care about. I also understand that explaining bisexuality would be more difficult than coming out as gay, since it's less common, and I'll likely be pressured to just choose to be straight and date only women. Given the circumstances, who should I come out to, if anyone, and what should I do to try and keep gossip and rumor to a minimum throughout this whole thing? Thanks, Branth the Dragon. Well, I guess I would cross that bridge when you come to it. When you have a partner, and if it does turn out to be male, see if it's something you want to bring out. It's also a choice of your partner. I mean, they may not be...
They may be on the DL, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So, I mean, it really... Depends. I'd work on your grandpa a little bit more, work on your grandma a little bit, kind of start making sounding boards slowly with them, you know, some more liberal type talk. But as far as coming out, I mean, yeah, I could see how I understand about likely being pressured to just choose to be straight is unpleasant. I've had to have that talk numerous times, and just because you can be straight doesn't mean that you'll have the desire to be. I mean, you're always going to have that drive towards whatever gender you quote-unquote give up. But it's also, in the gay community, you're going to run into that same bias. I mean, it's like, chicks are crazy. Why don't you just stick with dudes? I mean, in either way you go, you're going to get that pressure to stick whatever flavor they're comfortable with, and, you know.
Yeah, bisexuals are like, we're kind of discriminated against on both sides in some cases.
Yeah.
depending.
You wishy-washy motherfucker.
I guess we're kind of lucky here. All three of us are bi. You know, we seem to know a lot of bisexuals.
It's because we're constantly horny.
That's not really true of me, but...
No, it's not of me either. You know, let's toss out some other stereotypes.
Yeah, exactly. I'll fuck anything that moves.
I was going to say, being a slut.
Yeah. Well, I mean, bisexuals kind of did it to themselves in the 70s. It was actually like a bisexual magazine called Anything That Moves.
Really? It's like,
which is amusing, but at the same time...
Horrifying.
It feeds into the stereotype of... Well, fuck anything, you know? It's like, no, that's really not actually true. Let's see.
Yeah, no, actually, it was 90 to 2002.
Oh, everything. You just looked it up. Yeah. Damn, you Google fast, son.
Anything That Moves was a literary, journalistic, and topical magazine published in the U.S. from 1990 to 2002 as an expansion of the San Francisco Bay Area Bisexual Network in collaboration with bisexual and bi-friendly editors, writers, and artists, become a full 64-page magazine with an international subscriber base.
I wonder if that was kind of tongue-in-cheek, you know, like when you say dog people fucking, if they took that as a...
Yeah, but at the same time...
making fun of themselves type.
Yeah, huh. I don't know. Then again, yeah, I guess we kind of... Boy, we'll never be legitimate with a name like Notcast.
Yeah. And like... The cover is like anything that moves. The magazine for the family bisexual.
What? Okay. I hope that was kind of taken self-parody, but you know.
Yeah, probably. But you know, honestly, if it was me, I'm not real comfortable with public displays of affection anyway. But if I was living in a rural part of the country, I don't think I'd come out. I think I'd get to a blue state as quickly as possible.
It depends. I mean, if I had a female partner, maybe over time I would try, kind of feel out a safe haven.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And then, but, you know, it really depends on the situation and who you end up with.
Yeah. You know, if you flip the iPad the other way, it would rotate all the way around. That might be better for that cord.
Oh, is it locked?
It must be. Undo the rotation lock. Yeah, the little one.
There we go.
Okay, cool. Sorry for interrupting our response to your email there.
Like, I borrow the iPad. I use it once a week, so I'm not that familiar with it.
Savard, what do you think?
You know, it's one of those things that, like you said, better burn that bridge when you get to it, maybe.
Burn that
bridge.
You
know, talk to your grandparents. Get them to be, you know, reasonable human beings.
Mm-hmm.
About them dirty fags, I would say don't really make a big issue of it. You know, it's not... It's probably in your better interest to be a by-the-way gay than a I am out and proud and, you know, fuck everyone that doesn't know.
I like that, a by-the-way gay.
Yeah.
You could also just, like, say it casually, you know, like when you're all gathered around.
This is my boyfriend. And that's all you need. You don't need to make a big deal out of it. You don't have to come to your, you know, parents crying, Mom, Dad, I'm bisexual. I like both. You know, you don't got to do that. You just, you know, like I'm dating.
I think the best time to do it is when you're giving grace at the big family dinner. And we thank you, God, very much for this bountiful harvest and for the amazing 9-inch long cock I got to suck today. It was so awesome. Amen.
You have graced insert boyfriend name here with a mighty, mighty member. But there you go. Bam, you came out and you got a fantastic Thanksgiving dinner.
And now everyone is high-fiving your boyfriend for his amazing cock.
Dudes and chicks.
You know, they're serving kielbasa that day, and you're like, oh man, that so reminds me of George. Or insert name here.
No.
No, it was like one of the National Lampoon movies. The daughter was like, everything reminds me of Jack. And it was like these massive steamed sausages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how long have we been recording?
About an hour. It's one of those things, you get the nine inch kielbasa, you're like, want to see a trick?
He's just
Steve throats the whole thing. Do we want to read the song submission email?
Yes, and then go to I will break? Read that.
All right, then.
Song submission. We have a song from the community. Huzzah!
Yay!
Hello, Pepper again, writing in after a year or so of silence. I've released my fourth album now with my group Look Left, and oh boy, have we improved since the last thing I sent to the not-wielding crew. This is But Then I Fell in Love, which I figured would be appropriate for the overtly romantic subject matter discussed on the podcast. It tells the tales of a few people, all in varying degrees of desperation, when they're caught up in the trap of affection. This is a single off the newest album, Bite the Green Apple, which is available on iTunes, Zune Marketplace, Rhapsody, Amazon, CD Baby, Google Play, and just about everywhere you can buy music online. You can hear more of our music completely free at our website, www.lookleft.us. Here's the track. Thank you for considering my song for the show, Pepper Coyote.
Yay.
There you go. Music track, music break. Holy crap. Enjoy.
Have you ever wondered how you got here? Corners turned and the bridges burned that resulted in yourself. Not too long ago, I was the master of my domain. But then things don't always fall into place the way that you had planned. But then I fell in love. It was an altered state of paradise. I'm always one step too far behind the game, the one cleaning up. But then I fell in love. But then I fell in love. It was about a year before the last one. Rumors fly, there was a voice from the sky, but who listened? And when the witch hunters gathered for a seance, there I was, proclaiming the end of an age that we had worked so hard to escape. But then I fell in love. It was an altered state of paradise. I'm always one step too far behind the game, the one cleaning up. But then I fell in love. And now I cannot bear to move my eyes. I was redefining how my heart should be. But then I fell in love. Ocean, I was stranded. I screamed and I cried until my breath was denied by the crashing wave. And as I sank to the bottom, I saw that I was rocking the boat. So I crossed my arms and waited quietly as I fell to my watery hell. But then I fell in love. It was an altered state of paradise. I'm always one step too far behind the game, the one cleaning up. But then I fell in love. And now I cannot bear to move my eyes. I was redefining how my heart should beat. But then I fell in love.
Yay.
Yay. And we're back.
Butt Shiva. Plug.
Butt plug.
Yay, butt plug. This week from adamandeve.com, we are looking at the My First Surge Vibrating Butt Plug. It's kind of small, so it's good for beginners. Let's see if they got size. It's 5 inches long. Oh, it's only 0.75 wide, so it doesn't have a huge diameter. I can't fucking talk, so leave me alone. It's a vibrating butt plug. Let's see. It's got 10 dynamic rhythms, high, medium, low. Surge up, stop, then repeat. You know, on, off. And then it's got the sudden various pulsatings. Let's see. You have to use a water-based lube. It's got a flared safety base, so, of course, it's good for anal. It's got a little controller for all different, you know, changing all those speeds, so you don't have to worry about, like, fiddling around on the base. Let's see. It uses two AA batteries. No, sorry, triple A's. Let's see.
Don't you forget one of my A's.
Yeah, you gotta have them A's.
Gotta have them all.
Just to read the review, they say you never forget your first anal orgasm. Well, here it is. Insert up to 4 inches of this plug, then punch in any one of the 10 powerful dynamic vibration patterns for tail-shaking thrills.
Tail-shaking, even?
Yeah, it says tail-shaking. That's one reason.
Oh, my goodness.
Made from 100% pure silicone for super smooth comfort. Just add your favorite water-based lube and go. It's great for beginners. Let's see. Beginners and even experienced butt plug users will dab a generous amount of lube on the tip, then gently push in and out of the sphincter to relax it. Doing so, well, my first surge butt, well, the butt plug is one of its vibrating modes, will help this process a lot. Be sure to lube the size of any anal toy to protect sensitive areas. Once inside, my first surge is well ready to take you to places you've never been. It's perfect during masturbation, predator sex, and oral sex. If you enjoy adult DVDs, My First Surge makes a great sex toy while watching anal scenes. For easier cleanup, try slipping a condom over your first surge before slipping it inside. When your butt session is done, remove it with the condom wrapped over the flared base, then throw the condom out. Clean your My First Surge with a warm soapy towel, then wipe with a towel dipped in water. Clean-up wipes are good, too. So, its price is $34.95, but as always, we have our coupon code NOT, K-N-O-T, and it's good for this guy as well, so you can take half off, so this will run you $17.84, and let's see, you get 50% off an item, free standard shipping, and let's see, oh, this one, if you add like $11.50 more to your cart, you'll get the Adam and Eve starter kit for anal.
Mm.
Looks like you get some beads, a small finger-based plug. It's one with a ring on the end, and some anal lube. So you get a fair bit of goodies, and this is half price. It's got only a couple of reviews, but it looked promising, and it looked like it was made of a nice, pleasant texture. So I thought that this one would be a fun one to look at this week. So for $17.48, you could get a nice vibrating butt plug.
Yay, butt plugs!
Yay, butt plugs!
Hey, secret butt fun.
Scary, but fun.
What?
I'll explain later.
Okay.
So, I read the last email, well, sort of intro email, so somebody else should read another email.
I think it's Fuzz's turn. I've read one, you read an intro.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Let me...
If I insist, which I do.
Let's all go inside the email. I've been archiving a couple of ones we've already read, so I can tell what we're doing here. Okay. Books, 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 books.
Oh, yeehaw!
Pachoo-pachoo! Dear Notcast, a Twitter post by Shiva yesterday about her reading the Wheel of Time series got me wondering. You've all said in the past that you're avid readers, so I was curious what a few of your favorite published books or book series. What are a few of your... da-da-da, I missed a word there. I'm a terrible reader, apparently. Shit. This is so inopportune. One of my own personal favorites is the Webmage series by Kelly McCullough, for it's a lovely mix of technology and magic all set in the Greek pantheon. Moonshine Fox.
I've actually read that series. It is actually really, really clever. It's one of my favorites, and I look forward to the next time one of those come out. They're fairly short books. They're kind of thin.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not long reads. But I've got all of them as they've come out. You want to...
Sure. So, obviously,
You would expect one of my favorite series would be the Doctor Who range of books, which I've been reading since the 90s, in various incarnations, if you will. I actually, as far as other books I've read, I just finished reading American Gods by Neil Gaiman, the author's preferred text for the 10th anniversary edition, which was on sale for $3.99 on the Kindle, so it was a really good deal.
Oh, really?
Yep, it's a pretty massive book, so it's a good price for that. I enjoyed that. I haven't read a lot of Neil Gaiman stuff, so I was actually kind of happy to... I felt like he was someone I needed to explore a little bit, since he is so popular, and, you know, I know so many people enjoy his material. And I enjoyed some of his movies that were based on his screenplays or book adaptations. So I read that. I try to mix up a lot of what I read is like stuff for publication that For Planet is doing. So between reading those, like, I'll try to throw in something personal that I want to read for myself just for the fun of it. So I'd read like 4 For Planet novels or novellas in a row, and then I was like, I'm going to read a book for me now. So I read American Gods. And so that's kind of my mix there, is I'll throw in something different. Before that, I read Kat Valenti's Palimpsest, which is something that Kyle KM recommended via the Unsheath podcast. So that was pretty good, too. Much denser writing style than American Gods, though. Very florid language.
Let's see. Some of my favorites. I love Stephen Bruce. He's not a well-known author. His style is kind of a mix of fantasy. It's a fantasy world with a strong kind of almost a Hungarian mythology tilt taken on it. But the main character is kind of this gangster, so a lot of the books have this kind of, think kind of roaring 20s gangster mentality behind, mixed with sword and sorcery. Hmm. It's actually, the main character, Vlad Taltosh, is, him and his familiar Loish are just great. Really addictive characters. I've read, of course, a lot of Mercedes Lackey, a lot of Anne McCaffrey. I love Jim Butcher, who wrote the Dresden Files, and he also...
listened to the audiobooks and reading those for a while.
Yes, the audiobooks are fantastic. But I've read all of his, both of his, Harry Dresden and his other series, the, Caldera. I'm trying to remember the name of that series. It's a very interesting premise. I've read a lot of books. Anyone who's been to my house, I've got a giant bookcase in my bedroom. I've got the bookcase in the living room. I've got boxes of books in my closet. I really don't lack for reading material. I love C.J. Sherrith, like I spoke a couple of podcasts ago. I'm trying to think of who else that I've... It's like I'm just thinking of this wall of books in my room. It's like, where do I start? Terry Goodkind's a favorite. And he actually just kind of self-published one of his own, a sequel on Amazon. It was really interesting. He didn't put it out through any of the major publishers. It was just kind of direct to Amazon publication. It's kind of interesting. The edit, you can tell that he didn't go through an editor, though, at least not his usual grade of editor. The writing is not as slick, and it's not as nicely... it doesn't flow nearly as nicely.
Who's this?
Terry Goodkind.
Heard the name, yeah. I haven't read any of the work.
I love... one of my favorite series is Tad Williams. There was... The Dragonbone Chair series is really fantastic. But, yeah, me and books, that's a very broad subject, and I could probably rattle on a lot.
Total book fags.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's where I hid a lot as a kid, is I hid in books.
Yeah, I read Holmes and London and Poe when I was, Sherlock Holmes.
You read a lot of that's kind of like part and parcel
classic
for people our age.
Well, I'm not meaning like I read them forced into it in school. I mean, I read those of my own volition.
Well, that's what I meant.
Really? Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
I thought I was clever.
I've been an avid reader my entire life. A little bit less so in the last few years, just because I read things digitally as opposed to actual books. I still love the feeling of a book. But, like, some of my favorite novels that... it's like, you know, I've read all the stuff by Lloyd Alexander and David and Leigh Eddings, Pulgar the Sorceress, The Belgariad, the Black Cauldron series.
I always meant to get into Eddings. I've never
asked. Eddings is really, really long, bit dry, but it's still like pretty good.
Feist, I got, I think, 5 books into Feist.
It was one of those books that it was a summer before the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in school, and I couldn't do sports because my asthma was terrible. And I was just kind of going down the list, going down the library shelves, and found this book, Pulgar the Sorceress. It's 768 pages long.
Oh, God. That's wow. Like...
And I was like, I bet that'd last me a little while.
Well, there's what I was saying. Ted Williams has the Dragonbone Chair, then the Tear of Farewell is the second one. And the last two books are both called Two Green Angel Tower. And I say two books because both books are about 1,000 page long each. It was one massive book. The publisher made him cut in half and sell as two separate books. But they're both about an inch and a half thick. And the type is not big.
Wow.
But it's the shortest 1,000 page novel you'll ever read because it's just like, oh my God, this is fantastic.
That's so really something to like. Be able to maintain that kind of intensity for a really long book.
I mean, I finished the first one. I was like, holy crap, where did I put the second one? Went out and mm-hmm. bought the second one.
But, like, another novel that I remember that kind of stuck with me was called Caverns of Socrates by Dennis L. McKiernan.
Mm-hmm.
That I had to look up the name of the guy who did it. It was, like, a person stuck in a VR world, like, I think it was pre-Matrix. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was a VR setting, but a fantasy setting inside the VR simulation, which I really enjoyed. I read that probably 2000, 2001.
Oh God, all the Piers Anthony I'd watched.
One book that I read as a kid, which really stuck with me, was titled "Villains by Necessity" by Eve Forward. Basically. The story is good has triumphed, evil has been defeated, except for very small, tiny pockets. And now the world's completely out of balance and bad things are starting to happen.
Because there's not enough evil to balance it?
Yeah, the world is unbalanced and is going to slide towards, you know, 100% pure potential energy and the world will end. And basically the story follows a sextet of villains who by necessity go on this grand mission to kill the person responsible for leading the great purge of evil and reintroducing a little bit of darkness into the world so that the world can continue. And it just, the book really stuck with me, and I really enjoyed it. It's one of those, it's just a pulp novel, came out in 95, published by Tor Books.
Mm-hmm.
It's apparently out of print, but is...
you could probably find a used copy on Amazon or Half-Price Books or something.
Apparently, it was pretty funny, but the book itself is probably hard to find.
Speaking of funny, I totally recommend Bimbos of the Death Sun.
What?
Yes.
That's a fun book.
Okay.
You'd probably enjoy it, actually. It's about a sci-fi con, but it's very amusing.
Okay.
And another big... I know this is probably very common for a lot of fur fags, but another big influential book for me was Watership Down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my mom got that for me in paperback when I was a wee lad, and I read it, like, 9 or 10 times. I don't even have the original paperback that she gave me anymore. I actually read it so much, it literally fell apart. Like, the binding fell in two, and it probably went by the wayside at some point over the years. And I picked up the hardback later on because I just still wanted a copy. And I've read the hardback like twice too. So
I think my mom still has our hardback copy of it. But yeah, I read it so many times.
Yeah. God, I feel like I should like read it again.
Yeah.
Sometime, you know, just it's I don't oft I barely have the time to read all the books that I want to read or feel that I should read. I don't have time to reread stuff I've already read, but when I was a kid, man, I could do that, and you know, and I still feel like that's one book that I would definitely reread.
Okay. Yeah, well, like in this review, like the one review for Films by Necessity, mm-hmm. the guy says that it's one book that he picks up and rereads every few months to a year just for the enjoyment.
That's cool.
You know.
Well, let's see. Wheel of Time was by Robert Jordan. It's a massive sci-fi fantasy. It's, I think, 12 or 13 books long. The author actually died.
Holy crap. Hmm? Well, yes, the June 1996 copy. A June 1996 paperback copy of Villains by Necessity goes for $492.70.
Holy crap.
That's one of those crazy algorithm errors, probably.
The author actually died before he finished his novel, so when I heard he was putting out books really fast for many years, he would put out one about every, I think it was about every year to 8 months. And these are really, really thick, complex, wordy books. God,
now I have to find a copy of this.
But it was so...
Take notes, George R. R. Martin.
Yes. That's another series I read. But... The problem is towards the end, he started getting really ill, and it became, and he had slowed down in his publishing rate because apparently it was a really painful illness, and his wife made him slow down, and then he gradually got to be, you know, completely in pain, and he spent most of his time writing notes about the world.
Mm-hmm. I remember this.
And, but I was always really dubious. I mean, it's such a massive world, massive undertaking. It's like, who could ever possibly take this guy's place and finish it? So I just dropped the series because it was, I had no faith that anybody would ever do it justice. Well, a couple of years later, my mate, Siam, hands me a set of books. It's like, read all three. Read them all. I don't want to discuss them with you until you finish. Read them. So I sit down, I read one. Oh, that's really damn good. Read the other two. Ha! It's a Mistborn series. And it's by Brandon Sanderson. And you get to the end of the books, all three books, and you sit back on your heels, and you realize there's been threads about what's been going on since the very first page of the very first book. And little details that were not incredibly important at the time, it just seemed like nattering on about the scene, mm-hmm. actually had a big, big point. And I sat back and was like, that was brilliant. That is the best, well-constructed, I mean, put-together trilogy I've read in a long time. And he's like, that's the guy who's finishing off Wheel of Time.
God.
I was like, oh, really? This guy can write on his own merits. I will now, and he's done another book since, Way of Kings. And I've read a couple of his other novels. Like, you know, this guy is a good writer, a really good writer, all on his own. I will now go back and finish Wheel of Time, which he was actually putting together with Jordan's notes and Jordan's wife, who is also his editor.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's anybody, I had a lot more faith on somebody can actually do this.
Yeah.
I like Frank Herbert's Dune series, where it's been kind of butchered by later authors. It's like, so I actually spent the last year listening to all the audiobooks of the Wheel of Time series, to and from work and on road trips and everything else. Two really good readers doing the visual, the audio of it. And then I pretty much, I got to where the last book I had read, just listening to it to get caught up because it's a massive undertaking to read.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I'm now caught up. I'm now with where I stopped. I am going to stop listening. And Webster actually, for my birthday, got me a 3-book set of the rest of the novels, the ones that have been released. So I'm well equipped to pick up and start reading again.
So is it the last one out in like January or something?
I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up. I know it's not been released yet.
But there's only one left? Is that right? I'm trying
to remember. Hmm. I haven't looked that much into it. I still have three books to go before I even get looking at that. So. Yeah,
well, COD Shadow does first.
Yeah.
Hey, Saverin, I found a couple places to have it for $30 and $40.
Oh, well, yeah, they have it for $30 and $40 used.
Yeah.
But, like, there was a place that listed it for new for that much.
Holy crap.
Well, I'm looking at, like, even half-price books. Their website has it $38.63, $100, $55.20. Villains by Necessity hardcover, $214.50.
Holy crap.
Why is this book so valuable?
I don't know. But small now that I've run? Talked about it and praised it, I really want to read it again. And now I'm just like, fuck, now I have to go hunt this book down. I have a quest.
God damn it.
Well, good luck, I guess. But, geez, that's... I don't know why it would be so... Well, I guess if it's out of print, I mean... It's like, it's crazy. Books are the one thing that it's like nowadays you can find like just about anything on the internet. But older books, still difficult. If it hasn't stayed in print and it hasn't been available as an ebook or something, it's just hard.
One of my weird quirks when it comes to books is growing up, one thing that got me reading is staring at my parents' bookshelves because they had all these books. And I'm talking when I was like 7, 8 or mm-hmm. stuff of. I had a pretty good reading comprehension, but there were books that I was not allowed to read because I wasn't old enough yet.
Right.
So there was this series of books that I stared at the covers for years wanting to read, and my parents were like, no, it's not for you. Finally, my mom handed it, it's like, fine, read this one, and you got to talk to me after each chapter to make sure you're comprehending. She gave up 3 chapters and then just let me go.
Yeah.
Well, it was the third in the 3-book series. It's called Dragon Drums by Anne McCaffrey. And then there's the first two, Dragon Song and Dragon Singer. Well, the particular covers of my mom's book are these very, almost look like they come from a tapestry. They're really beautiful, and they're one thing that really attracted me to wanting to read these books. Well, one of my quirks is when I go into half-price books, I go and I look for these covers, these specific covers of these 3 books. And they're, because it's half price books and these were printed in the mid 70s, I can pick them up for a buck. Mm-hmm. So I've got a couple of copies. I keep buying ones with better and better condition covers. I have like 2 that are in near mint now. I've got a couple of like tattered copies that I started with. So I've gotten a couple of near mint copies and I'm still looking for the middle book. I've not yet been able to find Dragon Singer in good. Good, but at least it's a cheap obsession. I mean, mm-hmm. buying $1.70 books is not, you know, a horrible thing.
It's not going to break the bank.
No. But yeah. So.
It's like Karen Socrates, which I just talked about. It's really available. It's mass market paper book, $3. Paperback, and 16 new for $1.79.
I wish Amazon had a better thing for...
It's like $1.79, $4 printing, $5.79 for a book that I read back in...
One thing I wish that Amazon had was for authors, where you could basically watch an author, as in, kind of like you do on FA, and every time that there's something new that they come out with, you know, whether it's a new novel, somebody goes into hardcover, whatever, you can get kind of this watch list of, hey... Whatever has published a new book, whatever has this coming out. Kind of like you could almost get a feed coming off of them.
Is this based on, like, the author page on Amazon, I guess?
But I wish you could, like, almost subscribe to it so you could go to, like, think of it like the FA watch list where you can just go and look at all the authors that you have specifically watching for them to put out anything new or new edition or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I wish Amazon had that.
The only thing else that I've been reading currently, though, is the latest Janet Bradmore Tides of War WoW novel by Christy Golden. That they've been doing this for a while, and I think it's really cool. They'll release a novel in conjunction with a major patch or a major release
mm-hmm.
to basically
In case you haven't paid any attention and you're interested in the lore, here's a crap load of lore that we're not going to really, do a lot of exposition in the game about. Because most people don't care. But if you do care, here's a novel.
Hmm.
And the story takes place prior to the events of Pandos. But it's not written for a very high reading level. It's just your standard pulpy novel about a video game world.
Which book is this now?
The Christie Golden, Tides of War. Wow, Tyrion was listening to it as well.
Oh, okay.
He had it on audiobook. But it's been pretty good. Pretty fun. Garrosh is a dick.
Pardon me. Nothing new there.
Speaking of like video game books, I actually really enjoyed the L.A. Noir anthology book that was out as an e-book. It's like 10 or 12 different stories in the L.A. Noir kind of setting.
So kind of that gumshoe.
Yeah.
50s gumshoe stuff.
Totally. That's so if you like that kind of setting, you should totally pick it up. And they used like a bunch of fairly well-known crime and thriller authors to participate in it. So it's quite good.
Hmm.
Yeah, and they did it for their last L.A. Noir game. They released a book in conjunction with the video game. And I don't play video games, but the book for a short while was available available for free on all the major book platforms for like a month or something like that. So I picked it up and I read it then. But it'd totally be worth the money if it's for sale now. So that's another one that's kind of cool.
Okay. Well, I should probably read another email.
Yeah, but that was some good conversation because books. We like books.
Yes.
Books.
There was another
one here. God, I love books.
There was another one here about reading.
Dear Princess Celestia, I'm so alone.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Here's another one about books. And as another author I wanted to talk about. Hello again, Notcasters. Just writing in a brief letter, first of all, to hope all is going well for you in the wilds of Texas. Secondly, I hope to run to all of you at OquaCon, as I'm getting to go this year after having missed last year. Should be a fun time. Last time I was there, the lodge wasn't open, so I'm curious as to how much back and forth one has to do between the buzzard, turkey roots, and the lodge for various events and the like. Now for the main reason I decided to write in. Last episode, there was talk about gay characters in fantasy fiction. And Shiva mentioned Vanyl books by Mercedes Lackey, which I also thought were quite excellent. There are a couple of other authors I'd like to chime in about. Perhaps others might like them as I have. The first is Lynn Fleming. And no, I don't know how to properly pronounce the last name. That is spelled F-L-E-W-E-L-L-I-N-G. The main series is called the Night Runner books, about two thieves spies that are bisexual but end up together. The fantasy part is good, and the sex not really explicit, but well done, I thought. The second is Fiona Patton, who writes a series about a fantasy country that is a lot like aspects of Scotland and Ireland in it. In it, all the royalties have same-sex companions to tend to their sexual needs in order to prevent unwanted babies and claimants to the throne. The first book is the best, titled The Stone Prince, and is mainly about the affection between the prince and his male companion. She's also married to another good fantasy author, Tanya Huff, which is cool. Yay, Canada. I suppose I've rambled on long enough, and now that you can get into something of actual interest. Laters, Rahata. P.S. Hey, Fuzz, don't let the other two panda you into unconsciousness. We tried! He ran away!
Fiona Patton.
They've been good this week.
That's only because he ran away at dinner. But the other author he mentions in here, Tanya Huff, actually has her own series of... where it actually features gay and bisexual characters. The ones I read of hers, there were Sing the Four Quarters, No Quarter, and Fifth Quarter. All of these feature, to some degree or another, gay lesbian characters, which makes sense because she's married to another woman. So I really enjoyed it. They're some of my favorite books, and I keep meaning to pick up and read her other series, but these I can heartily recommend hers. It's one I wanted to recommend in my, rant earlier, but I knew Rahata was going to mention it, so I'd leave it for here.
Yeah.
He wanted to know about Oklacon and how much backing and forthing and how did it change. So, my first Oklacon was when we were guests of honor in 2010. And it was really, really, the lodge wasn't open. They were renovating it.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of activity up around the turkey roost. So
Buzzard nest,
turkey roost, whatever the hell. And then my second year, the lodge was open. And it really seemed, I kind of liked it the first year better because you all night long you had a lot of activity up and around the turkey roost. And it kind of seemed to die out after dark. Last year?
Yeah, it seemed pretty split last year, where daytime stuff was up at the campground, but then the night stuff was down at the lodge.
Yeah.
But then again, the camping area and the lodge is, like, distance apart.
Yeah. So, there was some back and forth. They did, what, dances down there? Bunkhouse thing was down there. That was the main things that were down at the lodge, and there was a lot of the daytime. The main food area was up around the turkey roost. They did iron artists and all the usual stuff from the year before was up there as well.
The buzzard's nest.
Buzzard's nest, turkey roost, avian respite area, whatever. So, but yeah, that's coming up next week. Is it next week? Yeah, it's next week.
It's next week, yay!
So, I'm looking forward to it. I always like Oklacon.
We're going up there Thursday.
Yes, I'll be driving up that day as well.
Everything is paid up and ready to go.
Pretty much. I'm going to be working till about noon, 12:30 that day, so Siam will be picking me up, and we're going to be driving up there that night. I'm hoping to actually make the super sponsor soiree.
I'm going to miss that this year.
Yeah, well, I missed it the year we were guest of honor because I couldn't get off work. And then I wasn't a super sponsor last year. And this year, of course, I'm super sponsoring again for the first time. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And super sponsor again for the first time.
Well, this time I actually paid for it versus being guest of honor, which you get treated like one anyways.
Hey, maybe I can get incredibly drunk again.
Oh, God. Eat all the cheese, drink all the wine. Woo! So, yeah.
I got so drunk that one time. It was really kind of bad.
That was a very strange occurrence because you don't do that.
No, but it was wine and it was so good. Then it all hits you and you're like, holy shit, I'm drunk.
Yeah. No. So, somebody else's turn.
This wine is really good.
So, all right, so we should put that one. All right. The good, the bad, and the foray.
Foray, hey.
Disclaimer, if you would please, I would like to remain anonymous. Okay. Fox, Wolf, and Cat with Limbs to Spare, thank you for addressing my email back in Spaghetti Cyclone. And I must compliment Shiva, on decoding my derptacular vernacular. I regret not thinking you in person.
Derptacular vernacular should be like a kid's show on PBS or something.
Yeah.
So that'd be great.
I regret not thanking you in person, MFM, but it sounds like you had your hands full. The con has had more than a lasting effect on me as a moment of clarity soon came to a head as a full-fledged distrust of amateur artists. I suppose I could clarify myself, lest I offend. Back in June, I came across an ad on an auction site advertising a budding fursuit creator. After doing a bit of research on the quality of her work, I contacted this individual and we made arrangements for a hefty down payment on materials. After showing great interest in my suit and supplemental materials I provided, this person proceeded to string me on for what's going on for 5 months. Her FA account revealed she was out of work. I can sympathize, I too share this paradox, and unable to maintain her meds as well as a crashed hard drive, etc. I was willing to chalk this up to biting off more than they could chew. Then I caught sight of her comments, mostly folks flaming about a lack of communication, missing badges, where's my suit, etc. Now I'm suspicious. Oh, she has a tab on Artist Beware. Now I'm pissed. She has my money, and I'm empty-handed. One bad experience would not translate to eschewing the fandom, though. But given the fact that I'm still waiting on badges that I commissioned in Artist Alley back at MFM, I'm thinking this is no coincidence. Is it just me, or is giving a chance for an amateur artist just becoming too risky?
I know that everybody has a life throw them a curveball occasionally, but can't there be something said for accountability or saving one's name and reputation? A final example came in the form of an artist I had happened to come across quite by accident, as he travels in circles I dare not tread. After going through the detective work, I tracked this character down and found a person that not only complimented my style of art perfectly, but he seemed to offer an intelligent point of view. After shaking hands and exchanging info, I contacted this fellow after the convention only to find out he had a change of heart. Not wanting to lose such a magnificent talent, I offered a compromise, which fell on deaf ears. I apologized for this... My apologies for this lengthy interlude, just to ask a simple question, but I feel that without a backstory, a rational opinion cannot be formed. My question is this: is it just too risky to trust somebody who is not established? I know this fandom in particular has its share of crazy and sociopathic people, but I feel that if you take money for a service, that it is a responsibility of the vendor to take responsibility. Thank you for your time and tolerating this wall of text. Hope to see you at Free Fiesta. Keep up the good fight. Bro tip: paragraph breaks.
Yes.
Beyond that, you know, it is a crapshoot when it comes down to doing the individual artists. People in the artist alley,
are generally riskier
than artists in a dealer's den, because an artist in the artist alley doesn't have to give you much in the way of information. Mm-hmm. Somebody that has gone through the effort of getting a dealer's den table is usually an established artist, has taken the steps to do...
Has a bit of a reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And probably has some accountability and treats it seriously. Unfortunately, you know, you do come across these young artists, these inexperienced artists that get a bunch of stuff, take on a bunch of commissions, and then...
Get overworked,
or they just fuck off and get drunk and lose all your details... You know, it's entirely possible for there to be, you know, these unknown artists that just are useless.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, there are also artists who do take this stuff seriously that maybe they just missed getting a table. Maybe they didn't think they'd have enough money to get a table. Maybe they just don't know, you know...
How to do it.
You know, it's a real question. And unfortunately, the only way to know is to ask around about the artists. I generally only spend my money on stuff in the dealer's den. And this is not disparaging artists that normally only appear in artist alleys. But if I'm going to be at a con, I like to get my merch at a con.
And when it comes to spending money on a fursuit,
you know,
you really need to research this, look on their page, check for artists beware.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You really have to, before you drop a couple $100, you need to make sure that this is, you know, someone with a good reputation. Because take your money and run. So I'd say you've had a bad experience, and it's not one that I've had. But,
and, you know, I've had bad experiences too. I remember I had a badge take a literal year to get to me.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a single regular Real Media badge. And I learned my lesson and didn't do anything with that artist again.
And I've got it. Just this past week, I mean, just ever since MFM, my brain has been every which direction. I still need to mail one of our listeners the badge I did for him. And I'm just going to say, I'm sorry, I do have it. It's in my sketchbook, all kept nice and safe.
At least in this case, you've emailed the guy and said as much.
Well, we pass the notes on FA, but okay. I'm being tardy. I just have to find a safe way to mail it, whether it won't get crunched.
Mm-hmm. But you've been communicating.
Yeah, and so. I'm a derp, and I feel bad, so this is my public apology.
Yeah. You know, because it's one thing to communicate, and then it's another thing to just, you know, fall on deaf ears, go off into the ether.
Derp, derp, derp.
Derp, derp, derp.
I need to stop derping.
So I'm sorry you had a bad experience. Not all artists like that, but, you know... If you're going to drop money on things like a fursuit, like you've said, definitely research the person doing it. You know, be very wary of people with no prior work.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Try to focus on established artists. I don't know.
Yeah. Your turn.
Okay. Let's go back to the email here.
Two more.
Okay. I reject your topic and substitute my own. First and foremost, I do not apologize if this veers into...
You know it does.
Skip it.
Yeah, skip it. Anyway, serious times now. I have a friend who's a listener, so chances are he's going to know that I'm talking about him. It's you. This may lead to dueling letters, and if it does, I apologize, as that's not my intent. But the thing is that I kind of need help in trying to help him. See, he's a lonely sort of soul, and perhaps because of that, he seems to define his happiness as to whether or not he's in a relationship or not. Perhaps also he seems to dwell on old flames, and flames that could have been but never were. And if something happens, it doesn't lead to a relationship. It seems to ruin his day. Sorry, I put that comma in completely the wrong place there. Is there anything, and I do mean anything, that I could do, I am not local to him, to perhaps prop him up some? Do you have any advice for him? Thanks, and keep nodding those casts, Pyro.
So, without talking to him, it's hard to say. I mean,
you know, have him focus on, get him a hobby.
Keep him company.
Get him a book series. Get him to play video games online versus people. He's going to have a change of perspective and get happiness from things that are not relationships.
That's kind of...
I mean, you can lead a geek to anime, but you can't make him watch.
Yeah.
I mean, so...
So if his friend is, you know, right in, we'll see what he can say.
Yeah, I mean, if he writes in, that'd be great. But unfortunately, you can only do so much as a third-party observer.
All right. So final email. Forever alone and hating it. Reading is Keepers of the Not Cast Spell. I'm a fairly recent fan of your show, currently working my way through your episodes, both old and new, while working as a delivery man for a car parts warehouse. I really like the humorous tone of the show and find your voice to be interesting and useful, even if very little actually applies to me. This brings me to the reason I'm writing in, as I would like some advice on a problem that's hounded me for a long time. As Saverin has said many times, humans are social by nature and need face-to-face contact and socializing in their day-to-day lives. Hold on. For some reason, I decided to suddenly start writing an email. close that. This has always been a problem for me, as I have had a problem talking to people for as long as I can remember. I'm not sure if it's the fear of people holding me back or something else, but I actually get very uncomfortable and occasionally a little panicky in social situations. I've tried doing various things to get out and meet people, such as online chatting and going to fan conventions, but even those ideas didn't pan out. I've grown tired of talking to people in conversations that don't go past the game we're playing, and the obligatory, hey, how are you? And cons end up with either a solo shopping experience or me completely freezing in front of a celebrity. Starstruck and anxiety is a bad combination. The friends I do have are mostly in relationships now, and as you can imagine, have less and less time for hanging out. I want to meet people, though I will admit I don't know where to start, and just the thought of stresses me out a little. If you have any ideas where an incredibly socially awkward person could meet some new friends, and maybe even that special somebody. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to any advice tips you might have. Your lonely listener, Scud the Weasel. So, breaking through the social awkward shell to the creamy center.
Interestingly put, Shiva.
I tried.
Social anxiety, the bane of every nerd almost everywhere. Because there's not really nerds in Antarctica. They're nerds, but they're not social nerds.
Well, and they're very antisocial nerds. There's like maybe 5 or 7 of them on a research team.
And they're in Antarctica.
And they'll eventually all get eaten by the thing anyway, so.
or ravenous penguins. So, it's social anxiety. It's a totally common, normal thing.
you really have to just power through it and get better. You know, a lot of social anxiety can come from self-esteem issues. It can come from issues resolving body image. Not owning what you got, as it were. Saying, you know, look, this is who I am. This is what you get. This is how I'm going to present myself to the world. And they can shove it if they don't like it.
Yeah, it's kind of like looking at, hey, this person might not look like me. There's a couple billion other of them that I'll probably, you know, I'm sure I'll find a couple there that like me. So it's kind of learning not to give a fuck. Kind of. And,
But I mean, talking to people, conversations don't go past the game we're playing in Albuquerque. How are you doing? Well, I mean, you can always read a book, talk about the news. I mean, anything. It's, I think for you, it's probably about the setting. You know, you got to find a setting that's ideal for you and that you're most comfortable with socializing with people at. And if it's in a chilling at a person's apartment where they have some friends over, you know, it's a matter of just opening up to people. And I will, it's, you know, friends having weekly meetups for years and years helped a bit with my social anxiety. Mm-hmm. You know, Fuzz's thing, you know, when you have a general group of people and it varies from time to time, you know.
Yeah, well, mostly the people in the group are people you know, and there's that one stranger. At least you've got the you know, the insulation of.
They're the isolated one then.
Oh. And also what it comes down to, you got to look at what are you trying to address. When you're in a social situation and you start to feel that anxiety, you kind of got to sit back and think of, okay, what am I actually scared of? I'm feeling really ramped up and nervous. What am I nervous about? I mean, and you've got to, are they going to think that I'm awkward, ugly, fat, nerdy, whatever you think. And you kind of have to go back and I've met a person. And if I make a fool of myself, what is this actually going to do to me? Is it going to, I'm never going to see them again if it's at a convention. And if you do make a little faux pas, is it going to be something that they'll never forgive you for? I mean, so much. So what if you got a piece of spinach stuck between your teeth? The next time they see you, they probably aren't going to think, oh, God, that's that guy that did, you know, whatever.
Oh, it's spinach face.
Yeah, I mean, you have to kind of sit back and digest your fear and try to figure out what am I nervous about? And what is the actual ramification that's going to happen if I do fuck up? And it's kind of learning to look your fears in the teeth and try to control them, try to address them, try to find the root of what you're scared of and face down of, hey, the world is not going to end if something goes wrong. You know, you might not make friends with Bob, whatever, but there's always Steve or Joe or Cindy or whoever else.
Or Dick Wolf.
Or Dick Wolf that you meet the next time. I mean, there's billions of people on the planet. If you fuck it up for one, it's not going to kill you. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
There's one bitch in this world, my friend. One bitch with many faces.
So. It's kind of. That's. And I speak from experience in that case. I mean, I used to have really bad social anxiety and
yeah, me too. And it's gotten better with time and strangely the opposite of Savard's experience, because I guess I was organizing meets, but I don't know how the fuck I got like brave enough to do that, I guess, you know, but
yeah, well,
it just kind of happened that way. I started setting up like movie meets and stuff back in Florida.
Later here.
And later here, just kind of gathered people around me and, you know.
Yes.
Yep. So. And now here we are every week talking about dog people fucking.
Yep. Ain't no shame in that.
Well, that's it for the emails this week. It's 11 p.m. almost. And
I have to work a little bit tomorrow.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I had a dentist appointment earlier in the week, so I moved some hours to Saturday, so I got to work like 3 hours tomorrow morning.
Well, I'm sorry. I think we should probably wrap it up then. I think Shiva and I are going to go play some pandas.
Panda.
Okay. You can tank an LDPS and...
No, they're talking that foreign language again.
And I'll get the herp and the derp and the shigadoo-wop.
Oh, God.
And we'll do some scenarios, like raiding Fuzzwolf's anus.
That's a level on WoW now? I had no idea.
You have to avoid getting sucked into the pit of darkness.
So you stand in that?
What kind of loot does my anus drop when you defeat me?
It drops poop.
Yes.
Bloop. Anyways.
It's worth nothing. I'm sorry. Man, this game's kind of shitty.
It's a non-prize.
It's like the Marvel no prize.
Yes. So, on that note, good night. Good night.
And no balls.
Oh, no.
Oh. Neutered cast. No. Balls. 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 Lion-O. Balls.